What makes sportswomen tick? What motivates us? What inspires us? Who is the person behind the athlete? My name is Valerie Mulcahy. I'm a 10-time All-Ireland winner with Cork and a 6-time All-Star. Now I'm turning host and talking to some of Cork's greatest sports stars, or those who have a strong connection with Cork. In this series, I'm speaking to 6 inspiring athletes to find out their answers to these questions. This is Hear Me Roar with Valerie Mulcahy.
I got the eye of the tiger, a fighter, dancing through the fire, 'cause I am a champion.
My guest today is an Olympian, a world gold medalist, a European gold medalist, and also a proud Cork woman after moving here from her native Latvia.
Hi, I'm Sunita Pushpur. I'm here with Valerie Mulcahy on Hear Me Roar.
Yeah, you should just phone that. Yeah.
Hear Me Roar.
On today's episode of Hear Me Roar, we have the first part of my discussion with Sunita as she talks about rowing for Ireland, making Cork her home, her incredible successes, and how the death of her sister had a profound impact on her. But first, I asked her to take me back to how she moved to Cork. So we were just talking there, you've settled into Cork well now at this stage. I was asking you, were you in Dublin long? And you were like, yeah, only 5 years. So how long have you been in Cork?
So we moved to Cork 2011, so 11 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be 12, I think, in March.
And are you enjoying it?
Yeah, like, in fairness, time's flying, so it just feels, since I picked up rowing, the speed of the life just picked up so fast.
Yeah.
I feel like the years have flown by and I'm like, wait a second, how am I 40 already? So it feels a bit unfair.
But I'm nearly there with you. So the more you're doing, the faster time seems to pass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that.
Yeah. What's the favourite thing you like about Cork?
Everything, really. It's kind of nice, compact, close to the city, close to the woods, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, just you can get anywhere you want in nick of time. Well, not in the evenings in the traffic, but I don't like that anymore, but in general, I love Cork.
Yeah. And the people, maybe? Would you consider people, them to be one of the best things?
Maybe a few here and there. No, it is. It's really, really nice. I don't know. You'd have to pay me to give me back to Dublin, to be honest. Right. Pay me a lot to cover the...
And what about Latvia? What about going home? How does it compare and contrast?
Yeah, so I probably... Well, I know no Latvians will be listening to this, so I can probably say it's safe to be honest here. When we moved to Ireland, we were kind of like surprised how nice people were in general. And then after a couple of years, you kind of adapt. Just maybe get a bit nicer yourself, I suppose.
And warm then, up.
Yeah, warm up to people. I feel that in Latvia people are a bit like northern country, you know, a little bit colder in general.
Okay.
They wouldn't be like as polite even. Maybe it's the hard lifestyle or whatever, like the times are tough and
is it a cultural thing?
Maybe it's a cultural thing, yeah. I don't know. At this point I'm kinda, I don't want to throw them under the bus, but same time, when we, and every time we go, when we can feel the difference, like it's a little bit, you have to almost like toughen yourself up.
Okay.
And almost like expect that it's not going to be like, if somebody bumps into you, they're going to give you a nasty look, not say sorry. You know, it's as simple as that. Sure, I almost got run over with a trolley in a shop and I got murdered for it.
Really? Go on, tell me about that.
It was last summer and it was a worker in a shop. He was working there, employee. So he was pushing a big trolley with something and I was stuck between two, you know, they put like piles in the middle of the aisle and stuff.
Special
and
offers.
It was alcohol, I think, so I wasn't going to bump into that because I probably have to buy it all if I break it. And I had literally nowhere to go and he was starting shouting at me like, get out of my way. Like, I was like, what? Yeah, it's just things you would never kind of see here. And I don't know, maybe it's because we don't get much sun here. I don't know what's happening, but people seem to be nicer this side of the world, yeah.
I find that actually when you come home from a trip or a holiday or whatever, you it's a way of really appreciating Cork people again, or Irish people.
Yeah.
There's just that warmth there, I think.
Yeah, even our mothers, they love coming over because, like, everyone's so nice. I just go around for a run in the park and then they're all saying hello to me and it's like, yeah, everybody's smiling. Yeah, it must be just, I don't know.
Deep down, I think maybe we're not, but not in good front.
But, I mean, it's small things, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Somebody gives you a smile in the morning and then you just, like, set for the day. You know?
So I was really interested when I was reading about how you almost happened upon rowing again when you came to Ireland. It was pure by chance.
It really was. When we moved 2006, we actually only planned to move here for a year. Just, I don't know, learn the language, you know, experience what it is to live in a different country. And then obviously earn a bit of money and then move back, because we were just married, young family, no kids yet.
Yeah.
So that was the plan, and it kind of all went to bust fairly quickly, because the first week we moved to Ireland, we discovered that we were expecting a baby. So, and that was like the big decision. Okay, well, do we stay? Do we go back? Because, like, I mean, I haven't worked here, so I have no maternity benefits, nothing. Okay. So it was kind of, we still decided to stay and take on a challenge, having no grandparents around the corner to help us. So we're kind of, we knew we were going to be on our own. But we're quite, like, independent anyway. Yep. Like, we're independent people, and we kind of didn't think we need any help. Oh, good boy, but we were wrong. No, it was a nice challenge. I'm quite proud that we kind of got through it together, just two of us.
So did it take that long till 2011 or 2010 before you got the citizenship? Was that long, or was it more you thinking of whether we should stay or go home?
Yeah, if not for rowing, you probably would never apply for a citizenship, because, like, you're a European citizen anyway, so you can travel freely anywhere you want in Europe. But yeah, it was 2011, I think, just before we went to the World Championships. Like, the deadline was quite close.
And you had to have, did you have to have Irish citizenship to race for Ireland? It couldn't have been
at the World Championships, yes.
And it couldn't have been a case of living here for so long, no?
Yeah, well, I lived just enough. I lived my 5 years, and then
so
you
that allowed
apply.
You to
it just, I think I could only apply in April or March, but it takes so much longer to get the paperwork done. So I think there were good people helping out to kind of push the right buttons to get it sorted a little bit sooner. Yeah, I know.
Sunita had actually stopped rowing before she moved to Ireland. Content with her achievements in the sport up to then, and happy to move on with her new life in her adopted home. But a wrong turn on a trip to Dublin Zoo changed Sunita's destiny.
Oh yeah, so we moved to Ireland, so I stopped before that, because I just thought, like, sure, I got my medal at under-23s for Latvia, and we won the student university championships in 2004.
I'll talk to you about that in a while, yeah.
Okay, and I thought, like, well, I suppose I reached my potential here, so I'll just focus on family now, and was just in love, and, you know, and just focusing on the things like work, all those exciting things that you do, and spending our weekends together and stuff. Yeah, so rowing didn't ever think about coming back to rowing again, because I just didn't think there was anything else for me. And in Latvia, I feel I wasn't good enough to make transition to senior level. And once you're not good enough, you just lose all the support. And then it's not very popular sport as well. So it's kind of hard to...
Is there less funding?
Oh, yeah. If you can't perform, you have no funding, basically. Okay. So kind of underage, I was good enough. Yeah, it really is. Underage, I was kind of good enough to get some funding. But then in senior level, I just wasn't fast enough.
And that's
like,
it.
You have to work, basically. You have no way around, because parents can't support. Like, in Latvia, you wouldn't see many parents supporting their kids at age of 20. So it's like, once you're 18, get out of the house.
Quite different
go.
Ireland.
A little bit,
So you came to Ireland. You took a wrong turn in Dublin.
We already had Patrick then. And I was pregnant with Daniela when the same friend that's visiting me now. So we went to the zoo, and we took the wrong turn. Or actually, it might have been a different friend. Sorry.
It's okay.
I have more friends.
We can thank her.
So when we went, we decided to go to the zoo, and we missed the turn to Phoenix Park, and we went straight to Island Bridge. And I was like, hang on a second, there's lots of boats in the water. What is this?
Yeah.
And and then we figured out that one of the Casper's colleagues at the airport, his son was rowing in commercial. So we got a contact, and once, after about 4 months when Daniela was born, we were in the club, and that was it.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think you would have thought about it at all had you not seen it?
No, I don't think it ever crossed my mind to go back rowing. Never, I'd say. Yeah.
That's crazy.
It was just a spontaneous, oh, we're going to come back here once the baby's born. And we did. And then it kind of escalated fairly quickly after that.
I was going to ask, did you find that your performance was enhanced after having a baby? Or it's hard probably for you to compare now because you had been out of the sport for a while.
I think I definitely got stronger.
Okay.
Yeah, physically I got stronger. Or maybe I just never tapped into my strength before. But like my erg scores dropped by a good 40 seconds.
What scores?
It's the rowing machine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of a very measurable fitness tool for rowers. Like you do your 2K test and you know where you are.
Yeah.
And then you do one a few months later and then hopefully you're improved.
It's like a VO2 max on the rower.
Yeah, it's a pretty consistent as well. Yeah. Like it's not dependent on weather conditions or anything. So it's just, you just sit there and you can do what you can do.
No.
So, and my erg scores dropped fairly rapidly at that point once I started training a little bit more. So that was kind of like, oh, interesting. I think I did my first erg score after about 5 weeks after I started training.
Yeah.
Daniela was born in January and I did it in March. So, and it was kind of, it was off my previous best at that time, but it wasn't that far off that I didn't know I can break it.
Yeah.
And I broke my previous best then in, I think it's September or October. And then after that, just kept chopping off bits and bits off it. Yeah, it was encouraging because I thought, like, if I can do this with very little training, what can I do if I train more? And then it kind of step by step, you just get curious almost, you know, and just keep going.
Training to compete at the top of any sport is difficult, often lonely, and rowing is no exception. I asked Sunita to talk me through what her training schedule is like when she's preparing for a championship. She admits it's not for the faint of heart.
Can you tell me, like, the day of life of a rower preparing and training, like how I was talking before and to one of the girls in Skibbereen, and it's so intense.
It is. Like rowers rowers are considered to be crazy people. you basically do your, when during the heat of the preparation, you're doing your 14, 16 sessions a week, so you can do your 3 sessions on Monday, 2 sessions on Tuesday, 3 sessions on Wednesday, and so on. So you kind of keep.
And what do those sessions consist of?
Well, so on Monday, for example, we used to do, you do your long session. It could be long steady state, like 20, 24 to 28K, depends what block you're in. Then you do your weights, and then you do another 10K, like a threshold piece or something. And then on Tuesday, there's usually 2 longer sessions. So you do 24 to 28 in the morning, and then you do your monitoring sessions in the evening, like around 18 to 20K. It's a lot of mileage. You'd be doing like 40, 50K days.
And how long does it take to do that? If you go on the rower and you're doing 20K, how long?
On the rower, it's shorter. It's like just a bit over an hour, like hour and 20. As
Did you go on
the
water,
it's longer. You move slower on the water. So let's say 28K for me in a single would be 2.5 hours. And then,
so are you literally going up and down the same
for two
stretch?
And a half hours, yeah.
And turning, how do you do that then?
With the oars in the water.
That, you hardly go get out and swim.
It's quite the thought process in your head in a long session. It's like, just get to the corner. You get to the corner. Yeah. Just get back to the other corner now. Just like,
I
keep
know,
going.
It's like baby steps.
Sometimes you just get out and you just know what's ahead of you. And it's like, oh, this again. But then once you get in it, and if you need to kind of get your head around it every day. So it is crazy.
Like, you know, you've been to how many Olympics? 3?
I've been to 3 now, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you were at the World Games. Can I ask you, were you in Daegu in South Korea?
No, that wasn't...
I was at that in 2003. So I was wondering how it was 2004.
No, that was 2004. It was student world championships. It wasn't the games. Yeah, okay. It was straight after Olympics. We went in a double with another girl and we were convincingly, we won. And everybody kept asking, why didn't you go to Olympics? We just didn't qualify. So.
Simple as.
Simple as, yeah.
What's the difference for you in the singles and the doubles? How different is it? Like, obviously, it's probably worlds apart, but...
Yeah, it's very different. You like, I used to be scared of a single. I used to absolutely dread the thought of racing a single, but then I learned to love it. I don't know, it's just you're on your own, you're nervous, there's no one to talk to, you have to be mentally really tough.
Yeah.
And I don't think I was in the beginning, but that was 2010 maybe. 2011 we raced in a double, and then 2012 I got back into the single. Yeah, just the mental toughness, I think. I wasn't quite there yet.
Yeah.
But I had to do it, I felt, and I felt like that was my only option to qualify for Olympics. And it was a gamble, and it was quite a close one because I jumped into the last train and took the last seat. So.
Yeah.
In 2012, yeah. Yeah, that was a bit of a gamble. But
you were the only rower.
I was the only rower, yeah, and that was against the odds because on a paper I shouldn't have qualified. Okay. It was just like crazy power of will, I suppose. I don't know. Yeah, and here we are now.
The Olympics, obviously, the last Olympics was very different given that it was postponed, and then with COVID there was no one around to watch, really. Very different experience, but what do you take from each of them?
The first one, London, was amazing. Loved it. I mean, I had pretty much the same result in all three of them, but the London was magical. It was just the effort it took for the whole family to get there. It was phenomenal. I mean,
but it's only over the road. Oh my God! I know what you mean.
Yeah, if it's only that simple, then take your boat and off you go. Yeah, I mean, we did sacrifice a lot for London. I mean, we had no money. Like, I was not funded at some points in the beginning. So we had to, like, our credit card was used up to the bottom. Like, there were days when we had to pick, okay, is it the fuel or food? Fuel to get to the lake or food for children. It was really tough. And I feel those are the little things that you don't really think about on a daily basis that you've done for the sport to get where you are.
And you should, because they are massive things.
They are massive. Like, I remember Casper said, Danny opened the fridge one day and said, like, oh, there's nothing in there. That's like, yeah, I know. It's like, I wasn't there, obviously. I was training, you know, consumed with my own dreams and all these things, as he was there to see it all, like, raw and happening in front of his eyes. But then, obviously, like, tried hard, proved myself and got myself funded, and then things started to get better, and it took a while before you obviously feel the benefits of having funding once you've paid off all your debts and everything. But
the funding isn't even massive, it's just
it was in the beginning. No, so yeah, the funding in the beginning was like the minimum, but we were so happy to get that because we knew that's going to be, for us, that was massive support, you know. And then, obviously, I started performing better, and so the funding got better as well. So then we said, okay, now we're talking. It was still not big, but for us it felt huge because we had nothing before.
So that's London, and that hardship to get there. And I know now what you mean by it is the hardest to get there. And then 2016?
Oh, God, that was a nightmare.
Yeah.
I felt like it was so unfair because I was such a different athlete, and way faster, way fitter. I got my few medals in between there, so I started kind of making my mark on the international scene. So I was making A finals consistently, odd B final maybe, you know. So I was disappointed not to qualify for Rio in 2015, so I missed out because I just had a very stupid race plan for that race. And
how did it come all down to one race?
So it's the World Championships, that's the only place when you can qualify, and then there's the last chance regatta a couple months before Olympics. Okay. So if you don't qualify the year before, you're kind of sitting on the living on the edge for the entire year later to qualify to Olympics in the last chance, which I did in London. And So I had that experience of the pressure of the regatta. Yeah, but 2015, I was like, I was fit, I was strong. I could have qualified, but I don't know why I mentally probably just put so much pressure on myself that I burnt out or something. So on a day when I should have performed and be a bit smarter with my race plan, I went stupidly out and I was leading all the way out until like last 200 meters and then I was beaten by everyone. So that was painful. It's still painful to watch that race. But
do you watch it back?
I watched it a few times just to kind of show how stupid I was and remind myself that the good race plan is the key.
Okay, all right. Well, then there's
hard lessons you learn.
It's a lesson rather than just punishment.
It's a lesson and... Well, it's easy to watch that when you have a few medals in your pocket now. Yes. You're just like, stupid.
Okay, so that's 2016. Yeah. And was that race, the one that you mentioned, the bad race plan that you had a huge learning from, was that that final race, that final regatta, or was that...
No, that was the year before. So the final regatta, it was fine. I was fit and ready to fight, so I finished second, so I booked my spot nice and confidently there for the Rio, but... The Rio Olympics was another disaster because the weather conditions kind of threw the spanner into the works for the draw. It was unsafe to row. It was really unsafe. There was a footage somewhere that at one point in a race, I was sideways across my lanes and I had to do one arm rowing in the race to get myself back into my lane and keep going. It was dangerous. I don't know why officials let us race. I suppose the time scheduling, the money, the broadcasting and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's kind of, sometimes it's ridiculous how at the Olympics everything comes down to that. All your 4 years of hard work comes down to
factors,
broadcasting rights. So you just kind of like, cheers for that, see you later. So it was very unlucky, and I ended up in a really, really strong quarterfinal with two medalists in it and another girl that was a legend of rowing, so she beat me on that race and I beat her at the qualifiers, she beat me at the quarterfinal, so I didn't progress through the semis, so that was kind of painful enough experience.
Then you had your great 2 years.
17 wasn't great. 17, well, 18, I was kind of, yeah, and then it kind of,
okay, so 17 wasn't great, and did you reassess the end of the year?
End of the year was fine. I finished fourth of the worlds, but the beginning of the season was kind of more figuring out. There was a lot of changeovers with the coaches. It was all kind of very messy.
Yeah.
And then it took me a while to start to trust the new coach. And then by the time I did, it was the end of the season. So we kind of really peaked for that World Championships. And then I finished. I went with the goal to be top nine to qualify for funding again for next year, but I ended up being fourth and missed out on medal by less than a second. So that was kind of, it was a bittersweet because I knew if I actually got the medal, it'd be great. But at the same time, my goal was top nine. So you kind of count your blessings, you know?
Yeah.
And then that was the regatta when I was like, okay, I'm sick with this. I want to win next year. And
that
so I did.
Yourself,
like. got myself some talking. So
what was the big change besides maybe some of it was like getting your head in the game, but
it was a lot of factors, I think.
Yeah,
it was
the coach, the trust.
It was another coach again, so we changed the coaches again. And then I was so fed up with all this change, I was like, okay, look, I'm a big girl, I can trust myself a little bit more. So I was like, I'm not going to get affected by that anymore. So kind of gave myself another talking there, not to stress about things as much.
Yeah.
It was a change of the program, mindset a little bit.
Were these changes for the better? Sorry, were these changes that they were implementing?
It didn't feel like in the beginning that there were, because it felt like the changes in the program were really drastic. And that's the 16 session program. That's sort of like your 3 hours on the water and stuff.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, no way I can do that. And then
you have family and
and just like, I was like, yeah, good luck with this. I'm not doing it. I'm gonna do my own thing here. And I did for a while. In fairness, I kind of only fully accepted the program in February. So, which was 2018, and it wasn't quite as heavy as it was the couple of years later. The next, like 19 and 20, the program kind of escalated a little bit by a good 20%. So, and yeah, I was kind of like, all right, it's, I suppose, more fun doing these sessions with somebody else, not doing my own thing alone, you know. Yeah. So just kind of, okay, I'll do it, fine. And yeah, it just gave me another gear. And I think the intensity was like, I'd say about 50% more than we used to do before. So, like, we only had a few steady sessions per week, and the other sessions were all like work sessions. The intensity was kind of from lower end of intensity to like AT sessions and stuff. But yeah, it just gave me a lot of confidence that, like, look, if I can survive that training, I can do a good race. So the racing was almost like
easy part, is it?
An easy part, yeah. You just get, it's only 1-2k to do instead of 10, so yay.
So yeah. 18 was unreal for you?
It was good, yeah. Like, I was injured as well, so it wasn't all like roses, you know, but at the end of it was so sweet. Like, the winning the worlds was just like amazing.
Yeah.
Because I knew the girl that was unbeaten up until that point, she was beating us all by a good margin, and we were like, oh, how does she do that? And then just through the season, just getting closer and closer to her was exciting.
Yeah.
And then once we got into the last camp at the Worlds, like, that, she was the only thing I was thinking about. Like,
yeah.
It's like, yeah, that's her beside me, so beat her. You know?
Did you have a good sense before the race? Like, had you this feeling of, yeah, I can do it?
Yeah, I was confident after the first few rounds. I'm, funnily enough, the closer I go to competition, the less my confidence just goes. And all I need is confirmation from the numbers. So David, my coach, used to walk around with a book, and he was like, look at all these numbers, you're doing fine, just go into your race. I took a lot of confidence from the heat, the semi, because I could see the times and I could analyze them a little bit.
Yeah.
Not too much, obviously, because you only race your own race.
Yeah.
But it looked good. And I think that gave me a bit more confidence as well to feed from. And once I got into the last race, I was just focusing on my race plan, and that's all.
While Sunita had those good years in 2018 and 2019, privately, she was going through turmoil. Her sister, Anessa, was diagnosed with cancer in 2017, passing away less than 2 years later. It took a huge emotional toll on Sunita.
How tactical are those race plans? Like,
well, I have my own and I'm selling it after I'm finished.
Okay, because
okay. It's been working well so far.
I can be your agent for that.
Yeah, please.
But is it like, it's like the running races, you know, when you're from the outside and you're not in that sport, you don't quite know
what
they're doing. And like, do you break the race down into what, 4 or 5 segments, or how do you, giving it away?
Yeah, you do break in a few segments.
Yeah.
There's a few markers on the course, and you just kind of like, okay, this is my call, this marker, that's that, and that. And so you kind of break it down that I broke mine in like 7, I think, segments. And then once you get to the first marker, you're just like, okay, next one.
Yeah.
And then you're so focused on just getting from one marker to another that you don't actually notice the race go by.
Yeah.
But in that race, because I was kind of leading already halfway through, I was like, oh my God, I might actually win this thing. And then just like, back in a box, come on. And just stop thinking about
work.
It.
Yeah.
And just keep focusing again on your strokes, on your technique. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I really enjoyed it.
And do you think that success then helped you with confidence, or what was it that you were able to do back to back, which is a very hard thing to do?
Yeah, you see, the next year looked very, very different, as 2018 almost felt like you just have to get through the training and you'll be fine, as 19 kind of threw a few curveballs at us.
In what way?
So my sister got diagnosed with cancer in 2017, and 2018 she was still okay, she was kind of going through treatments and fine, and 2019 towards spring she started kind of going downhill, and that's where kind of it got harder, because obviously I wanted to be there.
You went back to Lafayette, didn't you?
I did a few times, yeah, but it wasn't ideal because it's like pre-Olympic qualifying year, so it was like tough because we were doing all the training to qualify for the Olympics. And so I went to Europeans that year, that was in May, and I said, like, well, I'd like to go and see my sister after Europeans for a few days, so I did. She was still kind of, she was in a wheelchair at that point already, but she was still kind of decent enough, so we could, like, drive places, I could help with the wheelchair to get her in and stuff, and then I came back and I thought, like, well, she might get better, you know. Maybe. And she was, I think, quite hopeful till the end, but And it was tough to kind of keep training and getting calls from my mom, oh, she's getting worse and this and that. And then at one point in the morning, I got so stressed that, okay, I'm flying now.
Yeah.
And then Casper booked tickets while I organized, told my coach that I'm going. And they kind of knew that it might happen.
Yeah.
So they were ready. Yeah, so we're like, okay. So I went for 3 weeks, which is during the summer, unheard of. Like if somebody goes away and still intends to race that season. So I'm kind of grateful that they trusted me that I'll do as much training as I can.
Yeah.
I missed like a World Cup, but that was fine. And it was rough there anyway. So I didn't
not like the rough water.
Yeah, no, I don't really like rough water. And so, yeah, that was a... Obviously, because I wasn't training in the center, my confidence would boom down to the ground because I was like, look, just go and qualify the boat. Like, I needed to come top nine to qualify. So I spent 3 weeks over there trying to kind of fit in training around, trying to care for her. And she was on a bed already at that point. So kind of she really went downhill very fast. So that was May, and I was there like end of June, I think. Middle of the June, something like those kind of dates.
Did she understand your need for training? Like, was she aware of the level that it takes to be elite? So, did that alleviate any?
She was surprised to see me again. She was like, "Oh, why are you here again?" And we obviously wouldn't
tell her that.
Yeah, we didn't. I was like, "Oh, yeah, they just gave me a time off, so I just went here." Obviously, like I never really went to discussion with her about like why I'm here.
Yes.
And suddenly, because I've never been at home during the summer, it's a race season. It was unusual, and she didn't ask any questions after as well. And she was like, she was on drugs for so much time that she was out of it, and it was kind of you just sit there and like be just almost watch, with her and stuff.
But would she have been sporty?
She used to be maybe when she was very young, but then she got her kids when she was much younger than I was, so she was kind of more like, you know, having children and stuff. She had three boys,
And she passed away what month?
She passed away 11th of July, and I was away doing my session at that time. My 3 10-minute pieces at Threshold, I PB'd. I remember that day very vividly.
Yeah.
And so, and then I went home. They didn't even call me when I was training, so then I went home and then I was told. Yeah. And I remember that day, I was like sitting in my sister's apartment in the kitchen saying, I don't really want to go training, but I suppose I have to. So I thought, okay, I'll do the quick session and then I'll come back. So yeah, and by the time I came back, she was gone. Maybe that's for the best, because my husband said like it wasn't nice, so he was there with her as well. So it was tough. It was really tough just to feel guilty for training and to feel guilty for not training at the same time.
Yeah,
because it was such like you're
well,
so
that's
torn.
Why I asked, would she have understood that the need to keep the training up as an elite athlete?
Yeah, I don't know. I never asked. I don't think she fully understood my obsession with rowing in general.
Because I actually read about it. Your parents weren't really keen on you rowing.
Yeah, they didn't want me to do it at all.
And then you just went off and did it.
Yeah, I went off and did it. I'm very stubborn.
Like, I think you need that, don't you, for
you really
to make
do.
It, I feel.
You do. So
stubborn / determined.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of a trend.
And a bit stupid sometimes. So that was a tough summer. And then she passed away after funeral. A few days later, we went home. And another few days later, I was on a camp already training for the last championships. Yeah. So,
and did she motivate you? Were you motivated to do it for her?
I found it really hard, but yeah, I felt like, look, she suffered so much through the illness. All I need to do is just suffer a few sessions. Like, you know, it was just like, she has it way worse. Like, stop complaining, just get on with it.
You seem to have a lot of perspective, like you've mentioned that a few times. You know, and trying to, it's a big thing, isn't it? Psychology and the mindset of spinning things to make it like be a positive.
Not always.
You don't always do that?
No, sometimes you just kind of like, oh, this is all so bad. And then you kind of, but then on the other side, like a day later, just like, look, maybe that was good.
Yeah.
You know, all the times I got beaten, it's hard to take.
Yeah.
But then you do learn a few lessons from it.
That's the key, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Some lessons take longer to accept, obviously.
Yeah.
But you try to find it. Yeah, I suppose you do try and find positive spin on everything.
That brings an end to the first part of Hear Me Roar with Sunita Paspore. A huge thanks to Sunita for her time and for being so open and honest with me. The second part of the conversation airs next Sunday, and we talk about the Olympic Games in Tokyo, the pressure on her in the lead up to the Games, what happened on the day, and how she dealt with the disappointment in the aftermath.
So I went into the doctor, and obviously, like, I thought, oh, maybe I'm dehydrated, you know, stupidly, just finding out things that you can fix quickly. Yeah, it's hanging on the last straws there, and I was like, I was on Dayol, I don't know how many of those I had that day, and I was just like trying to pump myself up and like, oh, I'm dehydrated now, but now I'm fine. So you're going into the race, like, and I was gone already, like, and yeah, it was really hard.
Hear Me Roar was presented by me, Valerie Mackay, and produced and edited by Rory O'Hagan for Cork's Red FM. Music was by the wonderful Jack O'Rourke. Thanks to my friends at mygames.ie who created a beautiful memento for each of my special guests. Gurev Magot, as Clusa Hurt Dominov, Ogspeg Mea Kaintlev Gulua. Slán.